How's everybody doing? Day one of VS Live in Redmond.
Good.
Yes, some excitement. So today we're going to talk about Microsoft Graph, about how to build solutions with the graph, and in particular how to use the SDKs that are part of Microsoft Graph to build those solutions. So my name is Paul Stubbs. I'm a principal content publishing manager, and I work on producing samples for the Microsoft Graph.
And I'm Robert Anderson, an engineer on the SDKs themselves.
And so today what we're going to do is we're going to do a little bit of back and forth. We're going to show you some code. We're going to try to keep this moving along with a lot of demos. And so we have really three things we want to talk about today with you. The first is we want to talk about, you know, what is the graph? Let's level set to make sure that we're all on the same page about what is the Microsoft Graph, what can it do, how can you use it, where do you find it, how do you get started? And then next we'll talk about, okay, how do we leverage SDKs? What SDKs are available? How do I use the SDKs and what benefit do the SDKs give me? And then finally we'll talk about authorization. How do we authenticate and authorize our calls so that we can actually use the graph in a secure way? And since we'll spend a little bit of time doing that, because commonly we see that as one of the major kind of hurdles that developers face when using REST calls, using Active Directory, and in general creating secure applications. So let's talk about the Microsoft Graph. So Microsoft Graph is really the goal to be one endpoint to rule them all. And what that means is it'd be really nice if we had a single API, a single way, a single mechanism that we could access all of the services, all of the cloud services in Microsoft, right? So how can we access all of our Office 365 data? How can we access all of our Active Directory users? How can we access other data around other properties at Microsoft? Well, the Microsoft Graph is that mechanism, it's that API that enables you to have a single place to build your applications and to leverage them. And when we think about this, right, this really becomes a much easier proposition when you're building your applications, because now I only need to know, hey, if I want to access data from the Microsoft cloud, I know exactly where to go. I go use the Microsoft Graph to do that. And so really the graph becomes the easiest way for you to call Microsoft APIs. And we think about the graph. Okay, so what is the graph? The Microsoft Graph is really a single API for accessing your data, such as data about yourself, data about your users, groups, messages, your email, your files in OneDrive, your notes, your Excel data. It's also about traversing that data. So how do I go from myself to my drive, my file items in OneDrive, to who my manager is, to traverse my organization, to traverse the items and properties of those files and of those objects? It allows me to do that through the graph. I can also use the Microsoft Graph to access insights. Who are the people that are near me? Who are the people that are close to me based on my interaction with those people? Which documents are trending around me based on the people that I work with and the documents that they're creating, reading, opening, using? We get that insight and that data that comes from those interactions of the graph. So objects in the graph, using intelligence to gain insight as to how those objects are used. And then finally, the graph allows us to use not only work accounts, my Microsoft.com account or my Contoso.com account or my Fabricam.com account, but I can also use my school and personal accounts such as Hotmail or my Outlook.com. Right? And so the graph enables us from a single endpoint, just simply go to graph.microsoft.com and have that single endpoint to access all of this data that's in Office 365 and other cloud services at Microsoft. So one of the challenges that we have today, or one of the challenges that the graph solves for us, is the fact that we have a lot of different endpoints out there today. We think about how those endpoints are sort of scattered and inconsistent. And they're scattered and inconsistent is because they've grown up kind of organically as new products have come on board over time. So for example, if you look at accessing Active Directory, there's the Azure Active Directory graph. And so if you want to go and access your users in the Active Directory, you would go to graph.windows.net, and then put in your domain, contoso.com, and then get your user. So that's how you would access that data there. But then if you wanted to go get your email, you would have to go to a whole different endpoint that may require a whole different way to authenticate with that endpoint. And you have to know, how do I authenticate with that endpoint? In this case, Outlook, and I would go to outlook.office.com. I'd have to know, well, what is the structure? What is the API structure? What are the objects? What are the types? How do I call this? What are the patterns that they're using? Right? What does it mean to be a certain type? What does a folder mean in Outlook? Which may be different than what a folder means in, let's say, SharePoint. Right? So you have to understand all of those nuances from each one of those endpoints. If I want to access my OneDrive data, I would go to, you know, my domain, contoso-my.sharepoint.com, and then access that. If I want to access my personal OneDrive, I would go to api.onedrive.com, right? So even for OneDrive, there was two completely separate endpoints. Again, as a developer, you would need to know, okay, which API do I use? How do I authenticate? Which authentication provider do I use? What token format do I use? How can I authenticate with that? What libraries are available? If you want to access your Windows Live profile, you would go to apis.live.net. If you want to access your SharePoint user profile, you would have to go to contoso.sharepoint.com. So you can see that as developers, you have to learn and understand how to go to each individual, you know, store endpoint, if you will, to access that data. And it becomes really challenging to know. If I want to access the Office graph in SharePoint Online, right, aka Delve information, I would go to contoso.sharepoint.com/API and search. In other words, it wasn't even really an API. It's basically a search query to return that insight from the Office graph. If I want to get my a high-definition picture from Exchange, I would go to graph.microsoft.com/photo. Again, all that information is stored from a number of different locations. So even in the case of like your profile, well, some of your profile information is in AD, Active Directory. Some of your profile information is in SharePoint. Some of your profile information may be in Outlook. And so you would have to, as an application developer, call all of these API to gather all of the artifacts, all of the parts that become your profile. And so what the graph solves for us is the graph creates a centralized and consistent API that wraps up, that proxies all of those other endpoints so that as a developer, I have a single way to authenticate. I have a single endpoint to communicate with. I have a single way to do all of those things that we talked about before. So if I want to get my profile, I simply call graph.microsoft.com, specify V1, which is the production version, and then /me. That behind the scenes, what that's doing is that's actually going out and pulling your profile information from the various stores and services that are sitting behind all of that. But you as a developer, you don't need to know that. You don't have to worry about that. You can simply call /me and have a consistent, unified profile and data structure that returns all of your information. If I want to get my files from OneDrive, all I need to do is go, you know, graph.microsoft.com, version 1/me, and now I can navigate, again, through navigation, right? I can do /me/drive, root, and children, and get the files that are in the root drive of my OneDrive. Now here, what's interesting is that if I logged in with my corporate credentials, I would be pulling data from my OneDrive for Business store, right, files. If I logged in with my personal credentials, my MSA, my Microsoft account, my Hotmail, my Outlook.com account, I would be pulling files from my OneDrive. And you saw on the last slide, there were two separate endpoints from before. Now it's a single endpoint. I just want to go to OneDrive and get my stuff. Depending on how I log in will dictate what files I get. The next thing, for messages, you want to get email. Simply say /messages. Or if I want to see my photo, I can just do /photo and see my photo. If I want to see my calendar, again, I can just navigate to my calendar. I can see who my manager is, right? I can traverse my hierarchy of Outlook. I can traverse the hierarchy of Active Directory by simply saying /manager. I didn't have to actually go to the Active Directory API to then look up who my manager is, right? Right from that single API, I can pull all that information. And then the same thing, I can pull files and information about the files. Here you can see that I'm figuring out what is the metadata, what's the last modified, by who modified that file last. I can see that. I can see all of the users and all the groups that I belong to. I can see people around me. I can see tasks that I have to do. I can see things like in OneNote. I can get my notes and traverse my notebooks and automate and edit my notebooks. And then I can also see insights such as, you know, what documents are trending around me. And one special one to call out, and the only reason I call this out separately, out of all of the APIs that are part of the graph, and the graph has a huge surface area, this one is special because it actually just went live into production last week. So last Wednesday it went into production. So now what you can do is you can use the Excel API to traverse your Excel documents, right? So you can power your own apps using the back-end features and services of Excel. So I can access my workbooks, I can access the worksheets, I can do things like sorting and get the range of data. And interestingly enough, the functions, so for example, I can call functions. And so I could use the functions capability of Excel to calculate Excel functions using that service in my application. So imagine, even if my application didn't really use anything in Excel, but I want to leverage the power of Excel functions and calculations to do some work within my application, I can just leverage that in Excel. I don't actually have to write that into my own application. So that becomes easy. And then the objects in Excel become very easy to use and consistent, right? One of the goals of the graph is to be consistent. So the way that I access data in Excel becomes really the same way that I access all of the data in the Microsoft graph to begin with. So you can see down at the bottom, we have graph.microsoft.com, right? Because that's the endpoint that I need to call. And then the thing that I need to do is I say me for my stuff, and then I can navigate to my drive, items, and then ID. So that's the OneDrive mechanism. So now I'm navigating to a document ID. And then once I have that document ID, I can just now navigate from there by doing /workbook and /worksheets and return a collection of the worksheets from that Excel document in that OneDrive folder. Right? So very consistent, very easy to use, very understandable structure in the way that those files are used. So let me talk a little bit about V1 versus beta. So in some of those cases that you saw before, they were graph.microsoft.com/V1 and graph.microsoft.com/beta. And so you can see here on the left, what we have is the list of V1 functions. And these are, think of V1 not as necessarily a version number, but as production. Right, so all of the things in V1 are in production. And last week, Excel moved from the right side in beta over to the left side in production. And so now these are production APIs that you can use in your production applications. But things like users, OneDrive, Excel, your mail, your calendar items, personal contacts, groups, directories, and we also have support for webhooks, right? So I want to gather a webhook each time a new email arrives, or every time a calendar alert arrives, I'm going to get a webhook. And then once I have a webhook, I can hook into things like like Slack bots or if this then that type of workflows and services, right? Or you can hook those webhooks yourself in your own applications and handle those events, those web events, right? But we also have the beta, and the beta is an interesting side because this is kind of the playground, right? This is the what's coming sort of view of things that are happening in the graph. And so you can look at the beta and see we have things in blue that are different, that are not in production yet. So you can see some stuff from OneNote. We have some stuff at the bottom from Intune, right? We have some task and people type of accounts. But all of these things happen on the beta, and then eventually that API solidifies, and then those services move into production on V1. Okay, so let's talk about getting started a little bit. So the first thing to do is really the jump off point for you as a developer. You should be going to graph.microsoft.io. And from that site, which is the developer portal for the graph, you'll find documentation. So all of the documentation, getting started, help that you'll see for this. It includes reference material, so you'll see all of the detailed reference for V1 and beta APIs. Those will all be there. You'll also find the samples and SDK links in there. So we have a number of platforms that we're supporting. So the graph, again, is a REST service. And as such, we're creating client libraries and SDKs for a number of platforms. So things like UWP and portable class libraries, iOS and Android, right? And we have samples for all of those. And if we go to that site, go to the graph.microsoft.io site, click on Docs and Samples, you'll see a whole list of samples. Now, these samples are really good because, for one, they cover a number of different platforms. So whatever programming language you're in, we have samples for them. But the samples are also all hosted in GitHub. And the samples are all open source and community driven. So if you have contributions, you want to fork the samples, you want to extend them, you want to take that code, all of those samples are available to you. And the documentation is as well. So all of our documentation we do in an open publishing model. So all of the documentation is written in Markdown, it's hosted on GitHub. So anything in the documentation that you see, you want to change, you want to help, you want to contribute, we welcome that. So you can just click on the edit button and submit a pull request, and we'll take those contributions from you as well. So that's really great. And then finally, the last thing I want to talk about real quick before I turn it over to Robert to show you how all this works is that all of the decisions that are made about how the API works, how the REST API is, are all kind of guided and principled by this API guidelines document that we published recently. And you can go out to GitHub and get this. It's API-guidelines is the name of the repo. But in there, it has all of the types that you should use, when you should use the types, the principles behind how the API behaves. And so internally, we use this guideline as new products come onto the graph. We use this as kind of the roadmap for how developers should be building their APIs. And you guys can take this documentation and these guidelines as well and use them as you build your own APIs as good and best practices for how you should build APIs in that set. So with that, I think I want to turn it over to Robert. Robert's going to show some demos. He's going to show us things like the Graph Explorer. He's going to show us some of the documentation. And he's going to talk a little bit about the samples and how to get them.
Okay, so I'm going to start with just looking at the documentation and it's kind of how it's structured. So you can see that we have, it's like you said, it's all Markdown based. We have sections for showing you how to do authentication. There's all the walkthroughs for the various different languages we have. So just kind of demonstrating here. You can basically look at ASP.NET or UWP, kind of gives you step-by-step instructions on how to get started. Going on from here, I mean, there's all the V1 references, how the APIs work. This is just standard REST stuff. Getting users, just standard REST, get calls, post calls, basic headers, using bearer tokens for authentication, nothing too surprising. If you go up here and see the sample SDKs, Windows, new tab, So we've got samples and or SDK links for pretty much every platform we support. Kind of a work in progress, so there's some SDKs coming, so the JavaScript ones are a work in progress. We have a PHP one coming, but I'm gonna kind of jump into code samples for UWP. So if you go here, it's gonna forward us to GitHub, and you can see here we've got five or six samples here for various things in C Sharp, UWP, snippets. Basically, the way the snippet samples work is little chunks of code that just show you, okay, you wanna go and get a user, or you wanna see a user's manager, or search functionality, filtering, things like that, and it's just kind of five, six lines of code that you can kind of extract into your own projects.
Yeah, and just to add to that, you know, my team builds these samples, but we're also building them across all the platforms, and we're building them for REST and SDK, so we're building them kind of two different ways for every different platform, so hopefully you'll find a if you want to see just the pure REST mechanism, if you want to see the pure SDK way to do it, if you want to see the, you know, the particular language mechanism, you can do it. And so all of those samples are in this organization, the Microsoft Graph.
Right. So what I did was here is if you go to this Microsoft Graph organization inside here, you can see we've got several pages of samples. You can take a look and see we've got Xamarin samples, if you're a Xamarin guy or lady. We've got basically Node Connect samples. Even though we don't have a JavaScript SDK, you can still call the REST APIs. So that's kind of this, and it's basically being built and expanded on a daily basis. We always have this mantra of always be shipping.
And my favorite, the bots.
And oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, he wanted me to show the bots. So we actually have a bot sample using the bot framework in C Sharp and Graph Explorer. So that's kind of cool. Going back here, so I wanted to spend a little bit of time on the Graph Explorer and kind of see this is a tool that lets you experiment with the graph and the REST calls without actually writing any code whatsoever. So you can just log in as a user in your organization or this tool doesn't currently support MSA, but that feature's coming. The Graph Explorer is kind of being worked on right now. So like he was saying before, you want to get your profile, just a simple /me. And you can see your nice little profile. Then I'm gonna do another sample here. So I've got some of these set up. So if you wanna see how fancy the Graph Explorer can get, this zoom is kinda weird. So the Graph Explorer can show pictures.
Is that actually you?
That is not me. That's the admin of our demo tenant. And let me switch in. So OData is the spec for the REST APIs that we use, and it can do a lot of interesting things with respect to filtering. You can expand on properties. The whole navigation through is based on these navigation properties inside of the graph. So from a user, you can go to your manager, you can go to groups that you're a member of and stuff like that. But I just want to demonstrate something simple like a filter. So we have, you want to search for all the all the conference rooms in your organization. And you
and
basically
I think
this
this is important, right? Because you can take your existing OData skills and just apply them
Correct.
To how you do this, right?
So this is just simple OData filters. So filters start with show me everything that's a conference room, and it shows basically a list of all the conference rooms, as you can see there. And then let's do one more. So if you want to look at this concept of select, so if you don't want to pull down all of the data for a particular user, I want this employee that I have named Fabrice, and I want to just get the person's ID, display name, job title. And if you notice here, in here, there's no department anywhere in here, but there's a property that's not actually returned by default. So you, this department field, click submit, and notice how the department field shows up. So there's fields that exist in the graph that actually aren't returned by default, and the select statement is basically how you'd go about getting those.
Mm-hmm. And you could also switch, you can also see there's like a V1 drop down there, so can I just switch?
So yeah, so if going back to the graph documentation here, so you look at the graph documentation, anything that's referenced inside of this beta endpoint, you basically just flip down the beta, adds a beta end tag, and I can do something that's not on the graph. So I think OneNote would actually be a good example of this. So let's just try this ad hoc. So I want to get beta me notes is a good example. So let's see if I have any notes. Beta me notes and see what happens. And that says no HTTP resource. What did I do wrong? Demos always go bad, so beta me notes.
Yeah, so this demo account doesn't have all of the artifacts filled out.
That might actually be a problem.
Yeah, so if you don't have any notes in this demo account, then they won't show up. But basically, this tool is really good because it allows you to explore the API without really any commitment. You didn't have to do anything to set it up, which we'll talk about in the authorization section later, kind of some of the things you have to do. We didn't have to create an application. You just pop out there. You could actually do it now if you want to follow along at home. Just go out to graph.microsoft.io, click on the Graph Explorer, click the sign in button, and then just start doing the graph, right? And then you can also do posts. You could actually do posts and other things in there. So if you want to go even deeper, you can do all of that information. So it's pretty cool, I think. Yeah, so now let's talk about the SDK. So now you've seen what is Microsoft Graph. You understand the problem that the graph is trying to solve. You saw kind of the benefits that the graph gives you by having a single endpoint, a single way to do it, a single authorization mechanism, really makes all of that easy from end to end. But in the end, it's still REST, right? And as developers, you know, REST is okay, but I like client libraries. I prefer, you know, the warm glow of Visual Studio and IntelliSense, and it's like a kind of a comfort blanket, right? And so in order to do that, you really need to have a client library. And so we recognize that, and we've created client libraries in the form of these Graph SDKs for a number of different platforms, right? And really, our goal is to abstract all of the kind of complexities of REST and give you that simple API, that simple library that you can use on top of that. And as we build each one of these libraries, we didn't just take the library and create it and clone it a bunch of times for each platform, but we think about each platform and we think about how that developer for that platform likes to develop so that the .NET SDK feels like .NET and the Objective-C SDK feels like an Objective-C language SDK and the Ruby SDK feels like a Ruby SDK, right? So it really is trying to really get at how that SDK feels natural and feels like it was written by a Ruby developer, which they actually were, and not by a .NET developer, you know, writing Ruby code, right? So it really feel natural. And to support things like IntelliSense, right? Probably the best feature ever invented is IntelliSense, would you say?
I'd agree with that. Definitely makes things faster.
So having the IntelliSense is great, right? In order to get that, you really need this strongly typed library. And this is what the SDKs give you. Also, you know, the SDKs, we can do things for optimizing how your experiences is. Things like annotations. I know you've done a lot of work with annotations. You want to talk about that for a little bit, or what kind of benefit you get?
Yeah, so the graph, basically, the SDKs are generated code. We have this repository that's all, again, it's open source and community driven, community participation. We take bug reports and contributions from whoever wants to help. And basically, we're generating these SDKs from a metadata endpoint on the graph. And the graph has basically definitions of everything that the graph supports, but it also comes with this set of annotations that basically say, for users, if you're not an admin, for instance, you won't be able to create users. So the annotations can be very rich. And as the platform evolves, we're adding more and more annotations. And ultimately, what it ends up doing is slimming down the SDK surface area and helping users kind of drive toward what they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I think it's great. Like, you know, I think of the annotations sort of like when you go bowling and they put the little bumpers up on the side to kind of keep you in the lane. Annotations are that way because with the REST API, you could call things on the REST API that you may not be able to do depending on whether you're an admin account or a non-admin account or so on and so forth. Annotations are metadata on top of the metadata, if you will, that the SDK generation tool uses to generate an API that helps you do the right thing, right? And so that's what annotations give us. And really, we want to have sort of an easy authentication process, right? We want to abstract some of the complexities of OAuth, and I'll talk about some of those complexities coming up so that we're kind of all on the same page about how that is. But we really want to abstract some of those complexities around OAuth and make it very easy for you to understand, how do I create an application? How do I register my application? How do my users log in? Which kind of code flow should I use? All of that is kind of helps you along by using the SDK. And then again, available multiple platforms. This is really a big effort that we're trying to do to support a large number of these open source languages and platforms, such as the .NET platform, right? So we have portable class libraries, so we can do things like ASP.NET, UWP applications. We also have iOS support, so we have an Objective-C SDK so that you can build iOS applications. And we actually have a number of samples, as Robert said earlier. We have these two basic ones, a connect sample, which shows you kind of how do I authenticate and connect and then do one action, which is send mail. And that's kind of the basic Hello World getting started sample. And then we have these snippet samples, which is kind of like how do I connect and do like 25 different operations, you know, send mail, create users, get my groups, and so on and so forth. And that's a much bigger one. And we have those samples in all of these SDKs. We have samples, those samples as REST, but we also have samples as Swift examples and Objective-C examples so that using just the Objective SDK, we can do both. Doing things in Android, so having a Java SDK to do things with Android. Python, Ruby, we have more coming that are in the pipeline, things like PHP, Java, JavaScript, right? A lot of these are coming. So if you have a particular language, hopefully you'll find it in this list and hopefully that you'll find these useful. And as Robert said earlier, these are all open source, so we encourage you to contribute. Right? Take a look at the SDK, give us feedback on GitHub, give us feedback on user voice, give us feedback and file bugs and issues against the SDKs, right? We love all that stuff. The product team is all active out there in all of those communities, so make sure you do that. And then the last kind of thing to note is that the SDKs target the V1 branch. So really these SDKs are designed to be production applications that you would use in your production code, so they target the V1 branch, right? So think about that in terms of the surface area and the things you want to do. If you think about, well, does the SDK cover that feature or not, we can think about that from that aspect. So in general, these are kind of the goals that we try to do for the SDK, right? Kind of get rid of the complexity, support a number of languages, feel natural like the platform that we're on, make authentication easy. And so really, I think let's just have Robert show you some of this. Maybe that'll make it easier to understand. Robert actually, while he gets set up here, he does a lot of the development work on this. He's one of our core engineers building a lot of the SDK tools. So, you know, if you're have trouble sleeping at night and want to have a low, deep conversation about SDK annotations or SDK metadata, you know, Robert's the one to talk to.
I mean, it's a lot of work. We're growing our team right now, but so, anyways, I just wanted to show the snippet sample, the UWP specifically. So we're going to look at the .NET SDK. I mean, this is VS Live. So, and then, kind of just this is just a standard NuGet package that you can download. You just do a search for Microsoft.graph. It's right there, included in your project, and you're ready to go. The SDKs themselves actually don't ship with an authentication piece. We have examples that do the authentication. You implement effectively like an iAuthentication provider piece, so you can choose to do your authentication however you want. And the SDK itself just takes effectively a delegate function that anytime we make a graph call, we just say, what's your current access token? And let the application developers worry about how they store and keep the refresh tokens and use them to refresh, give us access tokens so that we can actually go and hit the graph with bearers.
Yeah, I mean, that's important. You'll see that in the next section, which is when we talk about authentication and we talk about the different libraries and different issues. You'll see kind of why that design point is important, that those are kind of decoupled to make that whole piece a little bit easier.
Right. So the snippet sample is a relatively basic application. I'm just going to run it first to show you what it looks like, and then we'll kind of walk through a little bit of the code. So it's nothing fancy. We're not UI experts. Basically, all it does is let you say, I want to run these particular things, and then you can step through the code or whatever. I want to get my profile. I want to, I don't know, look at my drive or whatever. And it demonstrates the actual auth flow for this, assuming that it all works. So let's probe. So we're going to log in as one of the users. So we have a demo tenant that we tend to use for a lot of these tests, but this works with Hotmail accounts or your own Microsoft accounts.
And this demo tenant is basically an O365.
Yep, it's just a standard O365 tenant. So it's basically just running these snippets. It doesn't really show you anything. Just says green means they passed, red means that they failed for some whatever reason. So we're going to look at one of these samples. So the me, for instance, it's effectively just give me an authenticated client. So I kind of want to dive into this a little bit. So an authenticated client is a graph service client we've constructed with a delegate authentication provider. How you get your token is really up to you. Again, like I said, our samples demonstrate how to do this using a Microsoft framework that we'll talk about later called MSAL. And you can basically use that or not use it or whatever you choose to do. And once you have your authenticated client, I mean, using the graph is pretty easy. Is give me, create a request object and a standard get request HTTP wrapper. So it kind of looks a little bit like HTTP, but everything is navigation based and mostly discoverable with very little thinking. So I'm going to jump down to one that's interesting, that's the create file. So this one's actually going into OneDrive, and I kind of restructured this code from the real sample just to kind of demonstrate a point. I'm going to uncheck these, and I'm going to run create file, and I'm going to run this to my breakpoint. So the reason why I did this is I wanted to demonstrate that navigating through here doesn't actually cause any network traffic until we actually make the request. So we're building up requests. Start capturing traffic on Fiddler and bounce back here. So basically stepping through this code. Shoot. Let's try that again. There we go. So stepping through this code, all these calls happen effectively instantly. And you notice how in Fiddler, that shouldn't be there.
Those came up from before because you ran through it once.
Well, so Visual Studio does a whole bunch of weird VS Hub stuff. So this is just Fiddler. It hasn't actually done anything. And so this call right here is the one that actually hits the wire. I'm wrong. That one created the request, and the next call, which is the put. So I just pushed a file up into SkyDrive or OneDrive.
And what's interesting is that your authentication dialogue didn't pop again, right?
Correct, because I've already authenticated. And just to show that this actually worked, I will go over here. As soon as I find it, there we go. Refresh this page, and you should see a single file that was just updated a minute ago, or sorry, a few seconds ago, so I've actually done this call twice already.
Well, you ran it the first time, and then you ran it again.
So basically, it just showed creating a file on OneDrive. So I mean, it's effectively that easy, right?
So all that code is part of the snippets code. So if you want to see a bunch of common, there's like 25 different things. And we create those snippet codes kind of the same way across all the languages in both REST and SDK. So if you're familiar with one language, you can kind of look at one and then use it to help you translate into another language is one way of writing code. It's interesting. But I think that was a kind of cool feature here.
All right. You want to move on?
Yeah. Cool. So you can see the SDKs really help us to very easily create that, right? We see that we have kind of a single API. The SDKs wrap all that up and make that code much easier. I didn't have to deal with, you know, making a REST call and getting a REST result and parsing the JSON and creating the body of the request and putting the data out there and all that kind of REST stuff I didn't have to deal with because I was using the SDK. But one thing we do have to think about is authentication. And this is probably the thing that we get the most comments on, the most issues, the most questions on Stack Overflow and in the forums and in help requests. It really becomes authentication. And authentication is it's complicated. It's every time you do this kind of thing, you kind of have to think about how OAuth is and what it does. But let's just, as a level set, let's kind of go back and talk kind of conceptually at a high level. My explanation is not going to be 100% technically accurate because I want to kind of give you kind of the gist of how the flow works. And then you'll see Robert apply the flow and some of these concepts and how they appear and how they show up in the things and steps you have to do to actually build an application that uses Graph. So basically, we have two things here, right? Well, there's four. Let's start with two. Over on the left, you have your application that you're building. Your application wants to call and communicate with the graph. The graph we call in OAuth terms your resource server. And it has an endpoint, in this case a couple with the V1 and beta, right? It has graph.microsoft.com. That's the endpoint of our resource server, which is Microsoft Graph, right? So, but we need a way for our app to communicate securely with that resource. Well, that's where you come in at the bottom. So you are the owner of that resource, right? You don't want to let anybody access your email. I won't make any political jokes here. You don't want anybody access your email. You want to have that access be done in a secure way. In order to do that, you need to use a authorization server, also known as an identity provider, also known as Azure Active Directory, which acts as that authentic authorization server. And that authorization server has a endpoint, if you will, has a couple of them really. It has an authorization endpoint to give back authorization tokens, and it has a token endpoint to give you back your bearer tokens. Now, in that the endpoint for that, you can see here is login.microsoftonline.com. Tenant, which in most cases will be common, which means that you want to allow logins to occur from MSA accounts and from corporate accounts. You could lock it down to one or the other. You could say, I only want to allow MSA accounts, I only want to log corporate accounts, or you could even lock down the logins to be just strictly to a domain. I only want to allow people to log in with the contoso.com domain to my account. But in many cases, common is what you'll see in all of our samples. Common is probably a good safe bet because you're going to allow both MSAs and corporate credentials. And then /OAuth2, because OAuth2 is the protocol that we're specifying. And now V2 is something new. This is what we call the V2 endpoint. You'll see that in documentation for Active Directory. You'll hear people talk about the V2 endpoint. The V2 endpoint is in terms of authorization, it's a new endpoint for Active Directory. And so the endpoint for V1 is basically the same thing with the removal of the V2 section. So it would be login microsoftonline.com tenant OAuth2/authorize. But the V2 tenant, which is the new tenancy, the new way forward for Active Directory, is what we're going to talk about and really what I recommend you guys use going forward. And so what happens is that, so we have all these players. We have your application, we have Active Directory to give us tokens, and we have the graph to issue, to be our resource provider. But you have to authorize Active Directory to authorize your application. In order to do that, you have to register your application. You have to go to Active Directory and say, hey, I'm creating a new application called Snippet Sample, and I want you to allow someone to come. I want you to allow the Snippet Sample application to get a token. In this case, we call it a bearer token, and the bearer token is because anybody that bears that token can have access to that resource. And so you go online and register your application, and now with the V2 endpoint, there's a single common way to do application registration across Microsoft, and that is apps.dev.microsoft.com, which is the new app registration portal. And what's really great about that new portal, which Robert will show you, is that it has all sorts of benefits. One is you don't actually need an Azure account to use that portal. Before in the V1, you'd actually have to have an Azure account, could be a free account, but you have to have an Azure account to actually access the portal and the register and get to do that. Now in the V2 endpoint, that's not required, so that makes it easier. And so it has a bunch of other features. So basically you register your application with the identity provider, the authorization server. It's going to give you a client ID or an application ID. You'll see both of those terms. You get that application ID, which is basically a long GUID, a string, and you put that inside of your application. Then when the user goes to log in, your application is going to say, hey, I need to log in. I'm going to go to my authorization server. Here's my ID, which is what I've registered. And then Active Directory is going to issue back a token once you authenticate, and on you go. And then you have that token, and you pass that token along to your resource or the graph. So all of that work is part of the kind of the authentication flow that happens behind the scenes that using libraries you don't need to think about so much, right? You could write that raw kind of handshake and all that stuff, but we don't want to do that. We want to use libraries. So using the V2 endpoint, we have a number of new things, right? So the V2 endpoint has benefits over the V1 endpoint. Namely, it's what we call converged authentication or converged auth. It allows us to log in both with a personal and a work account, right? Because before in V1, you could only log in with your work account, right? V1 authentication endpoint only allows you to use, you know, contoso.com or your onmicrosoft.com account or your O365 account. I couldn't use MSA accounts. I'd have to go to a different mechanism to do that. So now with the converged auth and the V2 endpoint, I can sign in with both my personal and my work accounts. And then I also have a new library. The new library is called MSAL, or the Microsoft Authentication Library. Now that's different. You may be familiar with the ADEL library, right? The Active Directory Authentication Library. The Active Directory Authentication Library works only for V1 endpoint. The Microsoft Authentication Library, the MSAL, works against the V2 endpoint. Today, the library is in pre-release, so it's not full production yet. That'll be coming very soon. And today, the library only works in .NET. But more platforms are coming. Just as you have a bunch of platforms for ADEL, you'll see a bunch of library support across a number of platforms for MSAL as well. Other benefits of the V2 endpoint is that we have the new portal, right? I talked about that a minute ago. So that new portal becomes very easy to do, and we can have one app ID from all platforms. And so what that means is there's a number of different flow types that you can do. So I can have a web application, or I can have a native mobile application, right? And those are different flows on how those kind of authenticate. And in the new app portal, I can have one application ID that can handle both of those application types. I don't have to create separate app IDs for both of those types. Another kind of important feature, which is down the list, but I think it's important, is around dynamic scopes. Right? Dynamic scopes are the ability for you to specify the permissions that your application needs. So one of the things that you notice when you deal with OAuth 2 applications is as soon as you sign in, the first thing you get is a consent page. Do you want to allow Pokemon Go to access all of my Google credentials, right? That was a big controversy recently. And you have this big long list of properties. Well, do I want to allow Pokemon Go to access all of my stuff? And you as a user say, yes, of course. Because it's Pokemon, right?
Yes, Pokemon.
But you know that big long list sometimes can be scary for users, right? You have an application that you download, and you say, "Geez, why are they asking for all of these permissions?" And you, as an end user, may not feel comfortable with a new application that you're not familiar with, or a new developer you're not familiar with. Well, what Dynamic Scopes allows you to do is it says, "Okay, right now, when you first start, all I need to know is what's your email." Or what's your name? I just want to access your basic profile information. So I'm only going to ask you for permissions and consent to access just your profile. Later on, when you try to do something in the application, like I'm going to now create a new file, I may need to require more permissions. So I can ask you at that time, hey, do you want to, you know, allow the application to, you know, read your OneDrive files? At that point, you understand, hey, I'm trying to do something in the application. I feel more comfortable. I'm going to allow them to do that, right? It makes more sense. Well, this dynamic scopes, or also considered called it incremental consent, allows you to do that as an application developer. And the V2 endpoint enables that process and allows you to do that. All that said, the V2 endpoint is still in preview. There's a lot more features to come. They're working on getting parity with all of the features and all of the token types and all of the flow types that exist today in V1 and more. So definitely start looking at the V2 endpoint. We're converting all of our samples to use the V2 endpoint. So soon, all of our samples, all the SDKs will all use the V2 endpoint. We'll all use the MSL library. Now, the last thing I said was that the MSL library was .NET only. So what do you do if you're using PHP or Ruby? Well, in that case, you have to use a third-party library, right? So the Ruby community, the PHP community, there are a number of OAuth 2 libraries out there, and the V2 endpoint is an OAuth 2 compatible endpoint. So you just simply grab one of those libraries and you use that to authenticate. And then over time, the MSAL library will kind of expand to support a number of those patterns. Good? We all good? We're all on the same page? Excited about authentication? Yes?
Yeah.
When's the beer coming? Is that what you guys are thinking? Okay, Robert's going to show us some authentication demos here. And this is interesting. And so this is kind of the part where we talked about before around kind of decoupled. And this is where in the sample and in the SDK, it's decoupled. So I could plug in whatever authentication library I want to use. If I want to use MSAL, I just plug it in and then pass the tokens to the SDK. That's why we didn't bake it into the SDK. If I want to use a third-party library, I think, hey, the Google Java library is the one I want to use. I'm going to go use that or whatever the library you may want to do. And you can just plug it in to that point.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually take the Connect sample and just walk through the flow of how you would go about registering an app and hooking things up so that it actually works. So as you see on the graph.microsoft.io here, we have this app registration portal. So this is all the new stuff. The old stuff, I think the biggest feature of the new stuff is the simplicity of configuring tenants and apps. I mean, the old model of having to monkey around with Active Directory was a little bit of a pain. So you see I have my snippets app here, but I'm going to add a new app. I'm already logged in, so it would have asked you to log into this portal, and you can use pretty much any either MSA or work account that you wanted. So basically just create an app. As you can see here, it's assigned me an application ID, and by default, you have nothing. So this app's ready to go, but I need to add some platforms. And there's one of the things he never talked about was the difference between your standard auth flows where you have a backend server versus implicit auth flow when you've got client side only applications and you don't have to worry about having a backend server and knowing what your client's secret is. So that's kind of what the Connect sample does, is it's similar to a mobile application. So when you create a mobile application, it's implied that it's implicit flow where I don't actually have to have a secret. And the reason why that works is we're not actually forwarding back to any server. We're just kind of intercepting a standardized redirect URI.
Right, and the assumption is that if it's a client application, if the code is not on your server, it's not secure, and anybody could hack it and
Correct.
Get the secret, which is why we don't pass secrets. And so you really only need a secret if you have something that's secure, which is a website, a web API, something on the server side, right? And so that's kind of how those two come out to see that.
So as you see, I've just created a mobile application. I'm going to save this. And then all you do is you take your client ID, which I've already copied, hopefully. Go to your sample, or if you're using the Connect sample, I mean, your app might do something different. We've put all of the configuration settings inside of the app.xaml file.
And this, all of the code he's showing you is out there on GitHub, and all of the steps he's talking about now are detailed in the README, so you'll be able to just go through after you leave here and walk through all this code and do the exact same thing Robert's doing now.
Right. So you set your client ID. We've already baked into the application the default return URL. And then that's effectively it to get this Connect sample work. So everything else is already pre-configured in here. So if you want to, when you download the sample, you can look at this sample itself actually uses Microsoft Identity Client, which is MSAL, and the Microsoft Graph. And just going to look down a little bit. This mouse is... So MSAL is extremely easy to use. You basically just have Identity Client app, and you basically say, I want to acquire or attempt to acquire a token silently, and I've got a set of scopes that I want to ask for. And assuming that that actually succeeds, it'll give you back your token. And if it doesn't succeed, it'll actually pop up UI to the user. Yeah. And it does all kinds of checks on, is the bearer token that I have going to expire within the next 5 minutes? Because these things expire relatively quickly, but the refresh tokens last for a while, so we can continue to refresh these things.
And scopes, if you're not familiar, scopes are, you can think of analogies as permissions. And so it's a space-delimited list of permissions, scopes, that you want to ask the server for, and the user will then consent to that list of permissions, right?
So I'm going to build this app. So literally all I did was that one configuration setting for the client. I showed you how to run through an app registration, and the app is in the process of being built. It succeeded, and we're going to run it. See what happens. So the Connect sample is slightly different in that all it does is allows you to connect to a graph, and then it'll send an email to yourself just to show kind of the flow of how things work. So I believe that if I pick the admin here, we might be able to see the consent UI. Oop, that's not good. The demo gods are going bad. Try this one more time. Connect. Nope, this isn't going good. So normally you would get the consent dialog like we got with the other application. For some reason, there's some kind of a network connectivity issue. So
I think the point here is that dialog is being thrown by the MSAL library. And so then for whatever reason, we're not connected to the network. But that all that process happens and is handled by the library, right? How that web page pops and goes out and talks to the authentication server, and then the authentication server does all the handshake, gets your authorization token, could potentially get your refresh token if you specify that, and will then manage, you know, sending the token along to the server so that you can then have that token and pass that token to the Graph SDK, and you know that works. So you could plug in all the libraries. Like I say, the MSAL library is the new one. It's the one that's going to be used going forward, and it's the good way to get started and use a lot of the V2 features in the endpoint. All right, good. So now what we want to do is we want to stop and take some questions. There's a number of ways that you can communicate with us where we and the product team are actively on Stack Overflow answering questions. So if you go out there and post questions about the graph, you'll most likely get an answer immediately from someone on the product team who's actually either building the code or sits next to someone who's building the code. Also on User Voice, we actively harvest and manage user voice, looking for feedback, looking for feature requests, looking for issues, and generally just kind of comments that you have for them. And then also on Twitter, we have a fairly active Twitter feed so that we're constantly posting new things and new samples all the time out there. So stay on top and follow us on Twitter. And then again, all the samples are on GitHub. So if you're a particular type of developer, UWP, iOS, Android, we have shortcut links specifically for you, or you could just go to our organization on GitHub, which is Microsoft Graph, to answer those questions. So with that, we have just a few minutes left, enough time for questions, and then enough time for you to get to the event that's happening after this talk. Anybody have any questions? Yes? Go ahead.
Right now, this is implemented only for the cloud services?
So today, it's just for the cloud services, so just for Office 365.
Is there anything in your long-term plan?
We're always looking at opportunities to expand the footprint of O365, but that's still just plans at this point. So we don't have a, so the question is, what about PowerShell? So we don't have a library for PowerShell. That's good feedback. I think we should definitely take that and talk about kind of
so there is
PowerShell
the
support.
The .NET SDK is actually a portable SDK. So I mean, you could in theory wrap PowerShell around it. I know that there's actually been talks
about
PowerShell as well.
You want us to do that for you, right? Yeah. No, I agree with you. Are you doing a lot of PowerShell today? Yep, good feedback. Anybody else? Yeah?
This is actually a perfect opportunity. It's totally specific to me. Because I just recently set up an app for Azure AD integration with our application. But if we need to change directories for that, so like it was initially set under one client ID.
Yep. I'm not the authority on this, but my understanding is at this point in time, you have to recreate the app. But I understand there are plans for migrating in the future. So what I would say is if you don't need to do it right now, if you just hold on, you in the future, there'll be a way for you to migrate those over to V2.
Okay, yeah. I've got like a week and a half before it goes live, so I've got that.
Yeah, probably not in a week and a half. That is the portal for V2. The Azure portal is for V1. Good. Anybody else? Yes? Okay. Thank you, everyone. I appreciate your time. And if you have any other questions or you're shy, just feel free to come down and talk to us, and we'll be here. Thank you.